Welcome to Nancy's Nutrition Tips. In the previous episode, I gave you reasons why you want to prevent the roller coaster effect of blood sugar. In today's episode, I'm going to tell you how to do that. First of all, let's make sure that you understand what controls blood sugar. Your body produces a hormone known as insulin. It's produced in the pancreas. And that hormone, insulin, grabs on to glucose molecules. As you remember from yesterday, glucose is the result of the digestion of carbohydrate in the small intestine, which is absorbed into the bloodstream. So then insulin grabs onto those glucose molecules and transports it across the cell wall into the bloodstream, where it can travel throughout the body and be used for energy for all the tissues, all the metabolic processes, and your ability to think. Now, sometimes the body overshoots and we end up with a blood sugar crash and we feel jittery, irritable, a little bit tired, maybe some fatigue, and that means that we are in need of more glucose. But if we avoid the peak to start with, we won't end up with the crash. Let's talk about how we avoid those peaks. Number one, we want to keep insulin being effective. That means we want to avoid insulin resistance. Insulin resistance is where the cells of the blood vessel become resistant to the insulin carrying the glucose across, and so blood sugar remains high. Sometimes the pancreas doesn't produce enough insulin, so that also creates high blood sugar. But in terms of insulin resistance, the primary cause of insulin resistance is obesity, and obesity is often then the direct result of or the cause of chronic inflammation. So you can learn in other sessions from me how to eat to reduce chronic inflammation, but just understand that insulin resistance is one of the primary causes of high blood sugar. What about glycemic index? Have you heard about it? Glycemic index assigns a numeric score to a food based on how drastically it makes your blood sugar rise. The lower a food's glycemic index, the slower blood sugar rises after eating that food. Foods are ranked on a scale of 0 to 100, with pure sugar being 100. Glycemic index, or GI, is determined by feeding people 50 grams of a single carbohydrate-rich food on an empty stomach. In general, the more cooked or processed a food is, the higher its GI is going to be. And the lower the GI is going to be lower when there's more fiber or when there's fat in the food or we've combined the food with fat-rich foods or protein-rich foods. However, this whole GI thing, this glycemic index, can be a bit misleading. A serving of 50 grams of carbohydrate in one sitting is reasonable for a food such as rice, which has 53 grams of carbohydrate per cup. But the carbohydrate content in beets is just 13 grams. So a beet's calculated GI of 64 doesn't give us the whole story. In fact, we would need to consume 4 cups of beets in order for our blood sugar levels to spike. Are you going to eat 4 cups of beets? So what's a better measure of that blood sugar impact? It's called glycemic load. Glycemic load gives us a much better picture of the impact on blood sugar. It tells us how quickly food makes glucose enter the bloodstream and how much glucose it can actually deliver. So the glycemic load ranking gives us a much more accurate picture of a food's real-life impact on your blood sugar. Our goal should be to regularly consume meals and snacks that have a low glycemic load. And this is true whether your problem is you have high blood sugar or if you're one of these people who are hypoglycemic, meaning have regularly low blood sugar episodes, because high often leads to low. What influences the glycemic load of foods? One factor is food processing. The more further a food is processed, the greater the surface level of the food, and so the greater the glycemic load. For example, if we took wheat berries, which have some fiber in them, and removed the bran, and then pulverized that white grain into a flour, and then reshaped it into something like, let's say a cracker. And that white flour could be rice flour that's often found in gluten-free crackers. A serving of that rice cracker could spike the blood sugar within just a few minutes of consuming it. So fiber decreases the glycemic load. Reducing processing reduces the glycemic load. Fat and protein take longer to empty out of the stomach. So when they are mixed with carbohydrate in a meal or a snack, that reduces the glycemic load of the carbohydrate-rich foods. Also, there's some carbohydrate-rich foods which have a lot of starch that resist digestion. One of those is beans. So beans and legumes and whole soybeans have a low glycemic load. Other foods that are high in resistant starch are foods that have been cooked and chilled. And foods that get more resistant starch in chilling include potatoes, pasta, polenta, and rice, whether it's brown rice or white rice. And it's because cooking and chilling changes the form of the carbohydrate, making the carbohydrate resistant to digestion in the small intestine. And then, of course, always keep in mind this food combining with having other foods besides just carbohydrate-rich foods at a snack or a meal. So I'm going to give you some examples of foods that have a very high glycemic load. Glycemic load is, low glycemic load is around 10 or 10 and under. And medium or moderate glycemic load is between, say, 11 and 19. And then anything over 20 is considered high glycemic load. So the foods I'm going to tell you about right now have a high glycemic load. A serving of raisins and raisin bran cereal. A bagel. Cooked hot pasta. Freshly cooked sweet potato or a baked russet potato, eaten all by themselves, vanilla ice cream, and maple syrup as a sweetener. All of those have a very high glycemic load, and those are just a select example. Then there are some individual foods that have very low to moderate glycemic loads. All vegetables except potatoes. Fresh fruit, including apples, bananas, oranges, and watermelon. And sometimes people are told not to eat some of these because they say they have a high glycemic index. But we now know that that's not a very good measure of what it does to your blood sugar. Whole wheat bread and popcorn. Rice, pasta, polenta, and potatoes that have been cooked and chilled that we talked about that earlier. Edamame, beans, and bean spread like hummus. Nuts and seeds, yogurt and kefir that are unsweetened and unflavored, and honey as a sweetener in moderation. Red and white wine have a low glycemic load. And then there are some combination foods that we might eat, and you might want to know what their glycemic load is. Let me give you a few examples of those. 6-inch Subway sandwich that's prepared with turkey, cheese, mayonnaise, lettuce, and tomato, that has a moderate glycemic load, even though we have that bread. But because we have all the other low glycemic load things on there, the overall is moderate. Pizza with cheese, sausage, olives, and vegetables is going to have a moderate glycemic load. and oven-ready chicken nuggets, even though they've got a large carbohydrate coating on them. Because of the fat and the protein, they have a moderate glycemic load. So those are the things that I want to talk to you about today in today's episode. In a future episode, I will talk about some nutrients that have an impact on blood sugar levels.